Welcome to ACC Nation. We're up to our eyeballs in college football, and that's not the only place surprises abound. But first, sports news from around the conference. Seven men's and eight women's ACC soccer teams made their way into the United Soccer Coaches Top 25 poll, with Wake Forest men ranked number one, North Carolina women ranked number one. ABCA Volleyball Top 25 has Pitt leading the way for the conference at number 10. Florida State and Louisville join the Panthers in the poll. This week we'll get a look at the ITA preseason tennis rankings for freshman and newcomer singles, in addition to doubles for men and women collegiate players. The AP Top 25 in coaches poll find Clemson on top. Syracuse drops out of the AP, with Virginia debuting at 25. North Carolina, Boston College, and Syracuse get a nod in the receiving votes category. On the coaches' side, Clemson is the sole ACC team in the top 25, with Virginia, North Carolina, Boston College, NC State, and Wake Forest all receiving votes. Find out where teams rank in the ACC Nation Power Poll this week at accnation.net. All right, football this week. I'm blind. It started with NFL action, and you know why. The Bears lost to Green Bay. Really? At home?
Disappointing.
Oh, I know. You're not bleeding from the eyeballs like I am, but that was a horrible game. Horrible.
Well, I fell asleep in the third quarter of that game. I was so bored with it.
Yeah, and you know what? That's probably the wisest decision anybody could have made. You know, whether it was voluntary or involuntary, it doesn't make any difference. That was one of the most boring, horrible, trash games I've ever seen in my life. And really, I hope somebody got a kick up the rear end. A couple people, actually. And we'll start with the coach there, who needs to have a swift kick, because I think he screwed up. And I'll just leave it at that. That's my impression. And I think he left some people hanging. And I hope he learned his lesson. Speaking of people, screwing up, boy, let's look at what happened in the ACC. And we'll get to those games where the coaches are going to be, we're going to charcoal broil them during the show. So, because some of them deserve it. They really do. But we'll start out with something pleasant, something that makes you smile. I will just to, you know, touch on the NFL. Your guys, the Minnesota Vikings, won their game. Led by Dalvin Cook, rolled over the Falcons and looked pretty decent. So,
Yeah, I got to give props to Anthony Harris, former Virginia player, who is now starting for the Vikings at two interceptions and a fumble recovery. A huge game for him, an undrafted kid who fought and clawed his way from the practice squad to the active roster to being a backup, and he impressed them so much that he ended up earning the starting job this year, and he reaped the rewards.
Very cool. You always like to hear stories like that. And let's talk about Virginia on the college level now. A 52-17, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we didn't expect anything differently here, but it was a nice showing, a very nice showing. And, kind of rubbing Mike London's nose in it a little bit, I think. Maybe not on purpose, but, 52-17, hello. Okay. And that's what vaulted Virginia into the top 25 of the AP poll this week, too. So, just saying. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of look at this game here. And Virginia really seems to be clicking in a lot of ways. Now, there were a few things that didn't set well with me, but overall, I think they just seem to be coming together. What are your thoughts on how Virginia's performing and how they performed in this game against the Tribe?
Yeah, like you said, this is one of those games where you're just trying to fine tune for a big game next week against Florida State, and defense was really strong throughout this game. It was going in well into the fourth quarter where the defense was allowing less than half a yard per carry. Yeah, they threw in a lot of the backups to get them some reps, and they gave up a couple longer plays. I still think they ended up less than 2 yards a carry. Joe Reed had an awesome game. He had a nice 40-yard TD catch, a return to kickoff 100 yards for a touchdown. Just basically once he hit the seam, he just outran everybody, and he's got that – at deadly speed. He could just outrun, you know, just about anybody. Nick Grand, the cornerback who's playing opposite Bryce Hall, had a nice 85-yard pick six. Really big play for him. You know, he's going to be targeted a lot this year, and you know, he's going to need to make some plays, and he definitely did there. You know, all in all, it was just an awesome game for them. The biggest questions you mentioned are, you know, Bryce Perkins struggled a little bit in the second and third quarter through his first couple of interceptions and over 150 pass attempts. But, you know, by the time that happened, you know, they were well in control, and it wasn't going to make a huge difference in the outcome, but you didn't like seeing him throw some interceptions that were very questionable throws.
Yeah.
You did get to see the backup, Brennan Armstrong, who will be the future of Virginia. Redshirt freshman, looked really good in this game. The most amazing stat, I think, that came out of this game, this is the first time Virginia scored 50 points in a game since 2005 against Temple.
That's a significant stat, and it says a lot about where their offense is headed and how they're really coming together. I did notice that Bryce was frustrated at a couple of points, and one in particular, I think that Bronco Mendenhall really noticed that something wasn't working, and I didn't watch enough of the game to really get a good feel of what that might have been, but it seemed to me that there was the potential for either going for it on fourth down or kicking a field goal. Bronco went with a field goal, and I think that just sort of added to the frustration of Bryce Perkins. You know, sometimes you do this. You hit a point where things are not clicking, not working out, and coaches recognize that, and they know what's best. They just kind of bring you back, get your head back in the game, and then we'll put you there. You don't need to go out there and make a big mistake, an unfortunate mistake that can, you know, either get you hurt or hurt the team overall. You know,
definitely.
You know, so I think that was a good move. Let's move on to this Wake Forest game, because this was an interesting matchup also on Friday night. Wake Forest and Rice. Rice always gives a fairly decent game. You know, it's been a while since they've been, you know, really, I don't want to say that they've ever been a powerhouse per se, but I mean, you know, a competitive team. But nonetheless, they gave Wake Forest a good run for their money and made Dave Clawson and company work for that win.
For a little while, yeah. But you know, once again, Jimmy Newman, another outstanding game, 21-27. No Kay Carney in this game. He was injured. But they still got some performances in the running game. The freshman Kenneth Walker had a 96-yard touchdown run, ran for 125 yards in total. It was a little slow go for Wake, but once they finally got their rhythm going, they just pulled away. Ended up outgaining Rice 513-321. You know, big and impressive performance by the defense. They, you know, they obviously struggled against Utah State last week, and you know, they needed a bounce back game defensively, and you know, they gave up 21 points, but they looked better in this game. That you know, they've got an important game coming up this week, which we'll get into eventually, but you know, they're 2-0. You can't ask for much better.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I know that Cade Carney being out really takes a huge offensive weapon off the plate there, and it does make a difference defensively. I think as you kind of point out, this is really the place that I'm looking at the Demon Deacons and thinking to myself, well, you get somebody like Rice putting 21 up on you, you're going to have to do some fine tuning. Somebody's going to have to start doing a little better job if you have Rice putting 21 up on you. Because next week, as you said, the game that we're going to look at here and make some comments on, that is going to be a challenge. And that's, you know, they're going to have a hard time stopping the team that they're about to face. And we'll talk about that in just a few moments. Let's get into the early morning, 11 o'clock. You know, it's sort of like, I kind of felt like, gee, when did we become part of the Pac-12 and decide that maybe 9 a.m. games were good? Pitt, 20, Ohio, 10. Really doesn't speak well for Pat Narduzzi's group. I just thought that this should have been more of an easy breezy game to me.
I thought so too. And then this isn't the same Ohio team from last year. That was really good. They lost some key parts of last year's team, and they really showed in this game that they didn't miss them. But you know, Kenny Pickett had a nice rebound game, going 26-37 for 321 yards. A big day for Maurice French, 10 catches, 138 yards. Obviously, the passing game was going there. They struggled against Virginia last week, obviously, especially in the second half when Virginia changed up their defensive schemes and started blitzing more. They didn't have as many issues with getting sacks. Defensively, though, Pitt was much better in this game. They sacked Ohio's quarterback 6 times. Jalen Twyman had 3 of them. They held Ohio to 1.2 yards per carry. So impressive performance there. Pitt really needed a nice rebound win. It wasn't the prettiest win, but they got one.
It's a win nonetheless, right? Let's talk about needing a win, and but not instilling a whole heck of a lot of confidence in their fans. This is Virginia Tech. Now, they were upset by ODU last year. And granted, it's 31-17 win for the Hokies. I can't say that I'm a fan of any team in the ACC specifically. I like to see teams win. You know, we've had this discussion a million times, but just to clarify for people who are new, I like to see people in the conference do well. This really made my hair come up on my neck a little bit. I'm starting to really have some questions, and maybe I'm getting sucked in by the fan base here, because there's a lot of people questioning the coaching staff and what they're doing. And I'm not sure that's a fair thing to do this year. I definitely would do it next year with everybody they're supposed to have in place. And if they can't do any better than they're doing right now, that's going to put somebody on the hot seat. But yeah, you brought up something on Twitter, which we'll get into here in just a little bit. You know, after we look at this game, we'll talk about what you brought up on Twitter. One of the things you brought up on Twitter, because it was a couple of teams you did that for. Virginia Tech 31, ODU 17. Your thoughts of the Hokies?
Yeah, this was one of those situations where you see Virginia Tech's up 24-3 in the third quarter, and you're like, oh, this is going to be a nice, you know, rebound win after losing to Boston College last week. They were dominating, and the next thing you know, ODU scored twice in a row, and it was 24-17. But, you know, they got a big special teams play, 71-yard kick return that set up the final touchdown, a TD pass to Phil Patterson. You know, Ryan Willis was all right. He threw for 272 yards and 2 touchdowns. That was a pretty solid effort. We go back to the issues with that running game. They're still having all sorts of issues getting consistency out of the running game. They averaged 3.4 yards per carry, and stopping the run was an issue. That ODU ran for over 200 yards in this game. You mentioned, I thought this defense, you know, I thought they were better in the second half of last season, would just continue to grow as a unit, but. I mean, we're still 2 games into the season and we still got 10 to go, but I'm not seeing that same maturation of the defense I thought we would see this year.
Yeah, it's just something. In fact, this whole week seemed off to me, but that's, I don't know, maybe that's me, but it just seemed like a lot of teams were just not really playing their game. Now, briefly, and this really has to do with, you know, the stuff that you hear from fans. Everybody gets upset and starts talking about, well, we need new coaches, or we need a change in the coaching staff, or we need a new face to be the head coach, and et cetera, et cetera. It's just not that easy, you know. First of all, most coaches, when they come in, they really kind of have to start from ground zero. Rarely do you get past a perfect roster. So you have to do a lot of your own recruiting, build your own, you know, mindset, your schemes, the whole nine yards. Sometimes that takes 3 years. And fans don't have patience for that kind of stuff much anymore, especially at a higher level in the FBS. Now, here's where that the tweets come into play, because you made a point of sharing some information with people, and it makes you think, how much does it cost to get rid of a head coach if you don't give them enough time to build their program? In this case, quite a lot.
Yeah, you know, I saw what I posted on Twitter today, mm-hmm. and then someone else came with me with another figure. But I read something, I posted it on Twitter today, that Justin Fuente supposedly has a buyout of $15 million. Mm-hmm. Somebody else told me that it was $3 million, so I don't know which is which. But still, I can't see Justin Fuente being fired. Even if they go 5-7, I feel like this is a team that will bring back a lot, you know, almost the entire team next year, say for, no, I think they only have like 7 seniors, and you'll lose some players to transfer. So, you know, who knows how many, you know, they're not going to have a huge recruiting class coming into the class of 2020, but I don't know. And you're obviously going to lose Bud Foster after the season. You know, there's always the question about being the guy replacing a guy, a legend in this case. Mm-hmm. Who is Justin Fuente going to be able to attract for a defensive coordinator after this? You know, does he question the offense and maybe try to, you know, save his tail and maybe fire his offensive coordinator and go try to find somebody else? He has many avenues to go down still, and I just don't see, no matter whether the buyout's $15 million, $3 million, it's still, I don't think he's going to get fired after this season. I still think they're good enough to still win, to get to a bowl game. Maybe they're not the team I thought that could compete for the Coastal yet, but hey, like I said earlier, we're 1/6 essentially of the way through the season, so long way to go. We still got two plus months, nearly 3 months of games left to play. So we'll see.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody on the orange chat boards were calling for Dino Babers head after Syracuse fell to Maryland 63-20. Take a look at that game for us, Will.
If you've followed me on Twitter or listened to me on this podcast, I've thrown some caution to the wind about Syracuse. Like, I was not as high on them this year. I still thought they would finish second in the Atlantic just because I wasn't confident in anybody else stepping up to overtake them. But after a performance like that yesterday, whoo, that defense was, well, I guess there is no D in Syracuse Orange. So Maryland ran for 354 yards, averaged just under 8 yards per carry, 650 total yards. After shutting out Liberty last week and getting 8 sacks, they could not do anything defensively. It was just really bad. They couldn't run the ball well. They averaged 2.4 yards per carry. You know, Tommy DeVito did have a nice rebound game, threw for 330 yards and 3 touchdowns. But, you know, it felt like a lot of that was in garbage time still. I mean, he did make some nice throws earlier in the game, but I caution, you know, he's barely been a 50% completion guy over his career, struggled in week one, was better this week. I think the jury is still out of DeVito, whether people want to admit it or not. I've not seen enough out of him to say that he is the future at Syracuse.
Let's be blunt here. That was an embarrassing loss to the Terps. And if it is any true indication of the defense at Syracuse, and we've heard just the opposite with everything previewing, and on paper, we've heard that Syracuse had a solid defense. If that's what they show up with at the Dome against Clemson, well, we'll see.
They'll get smoked.
Yes. Next game up, NC State. Team really showing nicely here. 41-0 win over Western Carolina. I mean, look. probably not the best judgment of a team's ability, but a 41-0 win is a 41-0 win. And NC State looks good. I'm becoming more and more impressed with what I believe to be, again, a competitor in their division.
I'd like to see NC State get into a bowl game with South Carolina, which which would be official that NC State will have played all four directional Carolina schools before the season is over. It opened up last week against Eastern Carolina, mm-hmm. played Western Carolina this week. They'll play North Carolina later in the season. They just need to play South Carolina later this season to complete the directional.
We'll put the order in for you.
Yes, exactly. There's the biggest concern with NC State the last 2 weeks is their offense has gotten off to a really slow start.
It's amazing only you can actually do that without any assistance.
They only led 3-0 at the end of the first quarter here, and they had the similar issue last week against East Carolina. But you know that they must have finally woken up and realized the game started at by 12:30. But they really got going at the second, third, and fourth quarters. They ended up running for 309 yards. Bam Knight, the talented freshman, had 119, averaging over 6.5 yards per carry. Defense was really stout in this game. Obviously, they pitched the shutout and held Western Carolina to only 106 total yards and 6 first downs in this game. I mean, Western Carolina is not that great a team, but you know, you got to work. You know, this is you got to take care of business, and this is exactly what the Wolfpack did here.
Indeed, the next team was not favored by odds makers, and so they pulled off a nice, what would be considered an upset win. The first win for Jeff Collins in Georgia Tech, 14-10 over Southern Florida. And kind of a surprise to a degree. I've got confidence in you, Jeff. I think you can do it. I think I actually picked them to win that game. And you know, I watching it, it was sort of like, like that through the entire game. But nonetheless, a win is a win, and a nice win too.
Yes, it was. Not the prettiest looking game, I'll admit. It was a weird situation because Georgia Tech played 3 quarterbacks in this game. They combined to go 14-21, which isn't bad, 67% completions, but for 76 yards. Mm. So you're averaging less than 4 yards per attempt. They started Lucas Johnson in this game, only threw for 40-something yards. Just not a great game. They relied heavily on the running game again. Jordan Mason went for 20 carries, 99 yards, and a touchdown. Real solid game there, averaging just under 5 yards of carry. The big play of the game, Georgia Tech forced a fumble as USF was going in for the winning touchdown. Georgia Tech recovers on the one, that ultimately winning that game. Like I said, first win for Jeff Collins, not the prettiest win, but it still counts in the win column. And as for South Florida, they started off last year 7-0, and they've lost 8 straight since.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess the odds makers were off on that one. Death Valley. Well, they don't call it Death Valley for nothing. Texas A&M. Good old Jimbo returns to the ACC. And, he brought the team in to be part of the scene of the crime. Clemson, still not. I don't think they're firing completely. You know, if you got a V8 here, they're not on all 8 cylinders. They're doing 6.5. Something not quite clicking there completely, but they are getting better with each week. And if my memory serves me right, most of Dabo's teams sort of start off a little slow, and then they start clicking as they get into the season. Final score, 24-10, Clemson over Texas A&M.
Well, yeah, you mentioned it. You know, they're not clicking on all cylinders offensively. Last week, Trevor Lawrence didn't have a great passing game, but they had an awesome running game. This week, Trevor Lawrence was pretty good passing, but they didn't have the greatest running game. Travis Etienne, you won for 200 yards last week, only 53 this week on 16 carries. Big player of the game for them is Lynn J. Dixon, who was his backup, went for 79 yards at over 7 yards per carry. Really helped out in the running game there. Lawrence went for 268 yards and a touchdown, but did throw another interception. He was better than last week, but not by much. Defense, per usual, stout. Held Texas A&M to 2 yards per carry. And, you know, we saw a familiar sight, Jimbo Fisher going into Death Valley and leaving with an L.
And everybody went, amen. Boston College really showing that they have an offense, and people overlook the Eagles for a variety of reasons. You get into sort of this a habit of looking at certain teams within a conference and going, Well, you do that to your detriment. Boston College pulled off a 45-13 win over Richmond. The CAA opponent, not as good as they have been in years past, but nonetheless, the Eagles look pretty good.
I mean, I want to introduce you guys to Zay Flowers, who is he was a freshman on this team. He played really well last week against Virginia Tech. Had really nice plays again against Richmond. He pulled up his 24/7 sports recruiting profile. He was ranked 1,202nd in the class of 2019. This week he went 3 carries, 92 yards, and touchdown. He was just a very explosive player. I kind of see him in the mold of a Percy Harvin, a great pass catcher, but he can also take the ball and run it too on a handoff situation. He's probably the most electrifying offensive player Boston College has had in a long time, and this is a different thing from what AJ Dillon is, you know, he's capable of taking it to the house, you know, on a pretty consistent basis. He had 17 carries, 86 yards, and 2 touchdowns, but he also caught 2 passes for 54 yards and a touchdown. So you still got 140 total yards at AJ Dillon, but a guy like Zay Flowers, who is going to add another dimension to this offense, is going to take a lot of pressure off of Dillon. You know, David Bailey ran for 97 yards in this game. Anthony Brown only had to throw 14 passes in this game, completed 8, 3 were touchdowns. I mean, great. Yes, I know this is an FCS opponent in Richmond, but you're seeing a more diverse offense out of Boston College so far this season. And if they can keep that diversity going, then they're going to be a much better team, especially on offense, especially when you run up 518 yards against an opponent.
Yeah, and I want to point out that they're not slouches on defense either. This Knicks game, this is another one of the tweets, because there's an awful lot of people who are fans of the Seminoles who are not thrilled with Willie Taggart or what's going on. And after watching this game, I can understand. The first game, we get this, and I don't want to call it an excuse because it is a reality, talking about not hydrating properly for the week. Now, if you live in Florida near the Gulf, you know, if your players don't get that, I'm surprised they can, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time. And, now, in the second week, a team like Louisiana Monroe, you almost lose. 45-44, the final score. 45-44, Florida State pulls it out. Literally, it just staggers me to no end, Will, how this team just seems to implode week to week.
You look at some of the best defensive players that have come out of Florida State. We're talking Deion Sanders, Derek Brooks, you know, Jalen Ramsey, recent things, you know, Marvin Jones, Peter Boulware, some of the elite defensive players of their time. And then you see this version giving up 44 points to Louisiana Monroe and needing a missed extra point to win the game, blowing a 21-0 lead. I was watching this game. When they went up 21-0, I went out to dinner. My wife and I had a little date night. Leave dinner, find out Louisiana Monroe's driving the tie of the game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
This is absolutely mind-boggling. And this is not the Florida State we obviously have known over the years. And they gave up, you know, 178 yards rushing to Louisiana Monroe. Yeah, they had a great performance from Cam Akers, 36 carries, 193 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Wish they would have taken some of those 36 carries and given him some last week when he only got 15 against Boise State. But this is all about just the pathetic defensive effort. You know, they're not very good at linebacker. The defensive line's not great either. They're all right in the secondary. They've got a good secondary. But, yeah, I'm looking at them facing Virginia next week, and I'm not sure how they're going to be able to stop that Virginia offense.
Yeah, in fact, that was a talking point on the ACC network, as they're wrapping up games on all ACC. They're talking about how Florida State going into Charlottesville is really in a bad situation here. And if they continue to play like that, which I don't see that there's anything tells me that it's not going to be the same. You know, it's going to take a miracle to change that around in a week, right?
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely. You're basically going to have to have all those players I mentioned show up in disguises. I bet Deion Sanders approaching 50 could play better than some of the players in Florida State right now.
I bet you he would say the same thing. Man, it's going to be an interesting game. And I had thought about going to that game, but just because of the performance of Florida State, I decided not to, because I want to see a competitive game. I want to see two teams going at it, you know? I want to see some action, and I don't see it here. Let's move on past that. And before we do that, buying out Willie Taggart is not going to be cheap either. That's something you pointed out again with a tweet showing us that, you know, if you want to get rid of Willie Taggart, it's going to cost you a lot of money. Do you have the money to do that? And that challenge was presented also to me by somebody as well. So,
yeah, exactly. And to further clarify, if his contract expires right now in 2023, mm-hmm. and if he gets fired, his buyout is 85% of the remaining balance. So if they were to fire him before February 1st, 2020, they would owe him $17 million.
Yeah.
The boosters at Florida State have a better shot of coming up with the $17 million than the Virginia Tech boosters have of getting the $15 million for Fuente. And even still, my gut tells me he's getting another year for that reason. I mean, even if they fire him in 2021, mm-hmm. the buyout's only $12.75 million. That's still a lot, that's more.
It's not chump change. The only thing that you can hope for is that the ACC network is going to start generating a lot of income. Hope that people start buying a lot of advertising, and that's split up nicely between all of the schools. It might actually help you pull off some buyouts. All right, next, NC A&T, North Carolina A&T. Not a bad team at their level. And Duke had a pretty good game. Duke has shown me a lot more than I would have presumed that they would have had this year. And again, one of those teams that you should never, ever discount. Final score there was 45-13 with Duke on top.
Yeah, two games in, the best part of Duke is their defense. They've obviously held Alabama in check in the running game. Allowed 249 yards to North Carolina. And yes, I know it's an FCS school, but it's still an impressive feat. This is one of those stat pattern games I always refer to, the FBS FCS games. Mm-hmm. Actually, A&T was leading 10-7 late in the second quarter of this game, but then Duke scored three touchdowns in a little over 3 minutes to make it 28-10. The biggest concerns right now coming out of Duke are they committed 9 penalties, pretty undisciplined. Quentin Harris did have a good game, 342 yards passing and 4 touchdowns and another 83 yards on the ground. But again, this is North Carolina A&T. do that against North Carolina, for instance, and then I'll be really impressed.
Right. Quentin Harris, good quarterback, just needs a good surrounding cast to make that happen. And when you start having those sort of penalties and inconsistency where it counts, you know, you can be the best quarterback in the world. You're not getting anything done. That's the sort of thing that shoots you in the foot. So hopefully they'll be able to straighten that out. Let's go to our next game here. Louisville, not a bad win over Eastern Kentucky University. I mean, you know, again, we're talking this FBS versus FCS sort of situation. 42 zip. It just shows us what potential is there and where they will be in the future. So if you're a fan of the Cardinals, you should be pretty excited about where Satterfield's taking you.
Yeah, again, just like the previous game, this is a stat pattern game, but this is what you want to see from Louisville at its height. You know, they, you know, looked pretty good defensively. They, like I said, they looked competent against Notre Dame in week one, despite the score. Here, they obviously shut out Eastern Kentucky. It was their first shutout since 2013. Just allowed 172 yards to Eastern Kentucky. Snapped the 10-game losing streak. What you do like, obviously, Juwan passed through for 4 touchdowns. What I liked out of this is Javion Hawkins, their talented freshman running back, who had over 100 yards against Notre Dame, had 123 in this game on 11 carries. He's looking really good and might be the guy for that offense here going forward.
And the last game on our schedule, North Carolina and Miami. Boy, oh boy. Maybe we want to reconsider that, the return of the U proposition here. North Carolina coming up with a 28-25 win over the Hurricanes.
Yeah, I was really surprised how this game played out. Like I had Miami winning a close one here, but Carolina got out to a 17-3 lead after the first quarter, and you're like, "Whoa, what happened here?" It was just UNC looked really good offensively. I'm finding through these couple of games that Sam Howell is well beyond his years in terms of maturation. Definitely is not playing like a freshman. Very, very calm, very poised in these critical situations. Went 16-24, 274, 2 touchdowns in this game. Got some help in the running game. Javonte Williams had 10 carries, 76 yards. However, the rest of the team went for 26 carries for 23 yards. You needed somebody to step up, and Javonte Williams did that. On the Miami side, Jaren Williams looked good again. 30-39, 309, 2 touchdowns. DJ Dallas went for 107 yards rushing, but they were sacked 4 times. So that means that's in 2 games, Jaren Williams has been sacked 14 times. Mm, wow. I mean, 4 is better than 10, but still a huge, huge concern. And they probably could have been sacked a few more times, but you know, he found ways to escape the pressure and either run or hit a receiver. And discipline again an issue in this game. Miami 7 penalties, 57 yards. Carolina with just one 5-yard penalty. UNC is 2-0, so of many, but they're getting votes in the top 25 poll, which you can certainly make an argument for. If they win against Wake Forest, then we can talk to me.
Yeah, I think if there is a decisive win against Wake Forest, at that point, well, my gut says that they should be a top 25 team at that point. Now, whether or not I think it'd be 20-25. So,
yeah,
the thing is that, when people talk about rankings and polls, they get a little bit too cranked up for their own good. Early in the season, polls, rankings, everything, not completely a clear picture of what's actually going on or what is to come. And we've talked about this numerous times. It takes about 3 or 4 games before things really, the dust starts to settle and you know where people belong. And we may see that again in the ACC Nation Power Poll, which is coming out this week, too. I know that there was at least one person who was very upset with how Virginia showed in that. Now, I haven't taken a look at it just yet, but I don't think that's going to be the case again this week. But nonetheless, you know, until teams start to really prove themselves and to show otherwise, then, you know, you never know where people are going to show up. Teams are going to show up in these things. So, you know, be patient with them and wait and see where it goes, because there's a lot of information that goes into those that sometimes that on the outside looking in, you kind of take for granted. Let's take a look at some close top 25 games that didn't always go the way they were supposed to. Two overtimes. Number 7, Michigan, just knocking off Army 24-21. Two overtimes for a number 7 team to beat Army.
Yeah, there are questions about Michigan's offense right now. They have not looked very crisp these first two games. But once again, you know, Army has been a really good team for the last few years. Granted, they're defensive coordinator is gone and he's now at North Carolina, but you know, they were played really well again yesterday against Michigan. They only 340 total yards. Disappointing in the way that game ended, because I really wanted to see Army pull that off, but
yeah,
it was not meant to be, but a great effort by the Army.
Yeah, always give them credit, because they do play a tough game. Another overtime game. This knocked off somebody in the top 25 and sent them out of the polls. At number 25, Nebraska losing to Colorado 34-31. It took an overtime to make that happen.
Yeah, what a game. Nebraska got out quick, 17-0 in this game in the halftime. And Colorado stormed back. They went for a 96-yard touchdown. It was on a flea flicker, which was an awesome play. I mean, how often do you see a flea flicker from your own 4-yard line? And it worked. I mean, you gotta give them credit for it, man. But I was skeptical about Nebraska because, you know, you're asking a team to go from 4 wins to with the potential winner of the big of a division in the Big Ten. And I think, I'm not sure they should have been ranked in the first place, but they are not ranked now. But I got, you know, props to Colorado. They're a team that's they're a program that's on the up. They have they had a great hire, Mel Tucker, finally getting his first opportunity, and he's making the most of it. He's already, in his first two games, beaten the Colorado's two biggest rivals, Colorado State and Nebraska. So I think he's already had a successful first season there in Boulder.
Yeah. With just 2 wins under his belt, and that'll do it. Pac-12 action, number 14, Washington, falling to California, 20-19.
Yeah, credit to Cal, because they've been just butt ugly for a while, and they've really improved this on the defensive side of the ball, especially the last couple of years, and still got some work to do in the offensive end, but they're getting it done on defense. They sacked, you know, Jacob Eason 3 times in this game. Just steady offensive output, nothing too spectacular, but just, you know, winning with a very grinded out style, running the ball, you know, getting 192 yards on the ground, only throwing for 111. But like I said, you know, they forced 2 Washington turnovers, which were pretty much the key in this game. And, you know, Cal's an up and coming program. It looks like they're going to be a team to watch in the Pac-12 here.
Number 23, Stanford, it really got shellacked by USC, 45-20.
Yeah. Battle of backup quarterbacks here. Impressive debut for Slovis, the USC quarterback, going 28-33 for 377, 3 touchdowns in this game. Just an all-out aerial assault on Stanford. I don't think anybody was ready for that. For USC, put up almost 500 yards of offense in this game, and yep, big win for the Trojans. That probably cools off Clay Helton's seat a little bit.
And finally, this should tell us an awful lot, because if you broaden things out just a bit, it maybe gives you a better picture. At number 24, Boise State just getting by Marshall, 14-7. Number one, I think Boise State should not be ranked in the top 25.
Well, I think they got there just primarily on beating of Florida State in week one. You kind of expected their freshman quarterback to have a kind of a letdown game after playing so well in week one against Florida State. And he was solid, Bachmeyer threw for 282 yards and a touchdown, did throw a pick. Pretty solid running game. A game that ended 14-7. You're surprised that this was not higher scoring, but credit to both teams. Marshall was 2-9 on third down. Good effort by Boise State's defense. A couple turnovers on both sides, and just a solid game. Nothing too spectacular out of it.
So a quick look at what's coming up this week. We've got two games on Friday again. That seems to be the way things are going to be going. And this is a game that you had alluded to earlier, North Carolina and Wake Forest. That should be a really fun game.
Oh, the good old non-conference game. Yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very interesting day. It's actually going to turn out to be a good, pretty interesting game, though. Both teams are 2-0. And North Carolina kind of out of the blue 2-0. Wake Forest, kind of expected to be 2-0. We're going to have two good quarterbacks in this game, Jamie Newman versus Sam Howell. We're going to have, I think there's going to be points scored in this game. I don't trust Wake Forest defense to really contain Howell in this game, but I also don't know if UNC's defense is going to be good enough to stop Jamie Newman. I think this has some shootout potential.
Next game on Friday is Kansas at Boston College. Boston College is really in a nice situation there. I think that this should be number three.
Yeah, take all your money and put it on Boston College in this game. Kansas just lost 12-7 to Coastal Carolina in week two. So, great start to the Les Miles era, everybody. Getting shellacked by that, losing to an FCS school. But Boston College, like I said, looked really good so far through the first 2 weeks. You got to carry the momentum.
Some quick looks at games here. I'll run off a couple and then I'll come back to the ones that maybe we can make some comments on. Furman is at Virginia Tech. The Citadel is at Georgia Tech. Bethune-Cookman is at Miami. Louisville is at Western Kentucky. Duke at Middle Tennessee. That could be interesting. And now the games that we want to take a look at. NC State, West Virginia. That could be a good game. Even though West Virginia is nowhere near what they were last year or the year before.
Yeah, this game is interesting game. It'll be in Morgantown this year, but we're looking at the way NC State's played these first two games, outscoring their opponents 75-6, beating the East-West Carolina schools. You're looking at West Virginia barely beating JMU and getting blown out by Missouri. NC State is favored in this game. I think they should be a favorite, and I think they win pretty comfortably in this game. West Virginia is going through a little bit of a rebuild this year.
Pitt, Penn State.
Pitt's the only team in the league that has not forced a turnover on defense, and that's the only way I can see them winning the game. Penn State's had a pretty solid start to the year. Scored 79 week one against Idaho, 45 against Buffalo week two. This game being at Happy Valley, I think Penn State will win this one pretty comfortably as well.
Here are the two games that we talked about earlier that probably will have quite a bit of impact on the conference as a whole. Florida State is in Charlottesville at Scott Stadium to take on Virginia.
Boy, this is this was the first time in all the years Virginia and Florida State have played where Virginia is favored. They opened up right around a 7.5-8 point favorite, depending on where you look. We talking about Virginia's got two pretty impressive wins already. obviously winning at Pitt and handling former coach Mike London and William and Mary. Florida State lost to Boise State, and then again needed a miracle to beat Louisiana Monroe. I think this should be a pretty good win for Virginia. I think they win this game just because I just don't see Florida State's front seven being able to contain Bryce Perkins, Wayne Talapapa, PK Kyer, Mike Collins, whoever is going to run the ball for Virginia. I think this is going to be a game where Virginia controls it on the ground, and Perkins shouldn't have to throw a whole lot.
Well, take note, I am calling it the Dome like they want me to. Clemson visits Syracuse, and we anticipated a good game just because of recent history, but now I'm not so sure. But, you know, when you play at the Dome, it's sort of like playing at Death Valley. Things happen.
Yeah, and you know that crowd is going to be amped up for that game. Syracuse dropping out of the top 25 after losing handily to Maryland, but you're looking at the number one team in the country coming into your place. You're obviously going to be fired up for that game. However, Clemson opened up a 24-point favorite. It really shows you just where people think Clemson is right now. And I mean, obviously, after you gave up over 600 yards to Maryland, you're not going to be looked too highly upon. I think Clemson wins, but do they cover? I'm not so sure about that part.
Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation Podcast by clicking on our subscription link at accnation.net or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Blueberry, among others. We'd appreciate a rating and review while you're there. We're also streaming 365 24/7 ACC Nation Radio. Click the link at accnation.net. And thanks to everyone listening around the world. We appreciate you. Follow us on social media. Look for ACC Nation on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And of course, Will, Xavion, and I would all appreciate a follow on Twitter. Will is at Will's World MN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.
Score.